hair shining, and yelled, "Use the fucking light!" She caught the direction of his stare. Rune, the Reapers who still held him aloft. Bryce punched out her power, flaring bright as a supernova. The Reapers screamed and made good on their threat, hurling Rune toward the raging water. Cormac caught Rune before he hit the frothing surface, vanished again. The Reapers whirled, screeching and hissing. Bryce flared her light anew, and they scattered into the darkest shadows. Then Cormac returned and tossed something to her. The Star Sword. He must have taken it from Rune. Bryce didn't stop to think as she unsheathed it. Starlight erupted from the black blade, like its metal had been kindled with iridescent fire. A Reaper lunged, and Bryce swept the sword up, a blind, unwieldy block that she knew would have horrified Randall. But blade met cloth and rotting flesh and ancient bone. And for the first time, perhaps the only time in that world, a Reaper bled. It screamed, the sound as piercing as a hawk's cry, the others keened in horror and rage. The Star Sword sang with light, her power flowing into it, activating it, and nothing had ever felt so right, so easy, as plunging the blade into the bony chest of the wounded Reaper. It arced, bellowing, black blood spurting from its withered lips. The others screamed then, so loud she thought the sewer might come down, so loud she nearly dropped the blade to cover her ears. The Reaper surged, but Cormac appeared before her in a plume of shadows. He grabbed her around the middle, nearly tackling her, and they were gone. Wind roared, and the world spun out from beneath her, but they landed inside the Ox Training Center. Rune was coughing on the floor beside her, the polished pine scrubbed clean, except where the three of them dripped sewer water. "You can fucking teleport?" Bryce gasped out, twisting to where Cormac stood. But Cormac's gaze was on the Star Sword, his face ashen. Bryce peered at the blade she clenched in a white-knuckled grip, as if her hand refused to let go. With shaking fingers, she put it back into its sheath, dimmed its light. But the Star Sword still sang, and Bryce had no idea what to make of it. Of the blade that had slain that which was unkillable. Part 2. The Abyss. Chapter 25. Therion warily watched the two Sobeks lounging at his queen's feet, their scaly, powerful bodies draped over the dais steps. With their shut eyes, only the bubbles drifting from their long snouts revealed they lived, and were capable of snapping his arm off in one swift bite. The River Queen's throne had been carved into a towering mountain of river corals rising from the rocky floor. Lunathian lay close enough to the coast that the water in this part of the Istros had plenty of salt to support the vibrant corals, as well as the bouquets of anemones, waving lace sea fans, and the occasional rainbow ribbons of iris eels all adorning the mount around and above her. He had a feeling her magic had also created a good chunk of it. Tail pumping against the strong current that flowed past, Therion bowed his head. "Your Majesty." At this point, the effort against the current was second nature. But he knew she'd selected this location for her throne, so that any person appearing before her would be a bit off-kilter, and perhaps less guarded as a result.
"You summoned me?"
"It has come to my attention,"
his queen said, her dark hair drifting above her.
"That you asked my daughter on a date."
Therion focused on keeping his tail moving, holding him in place.
"Yes, I thought she'd enjoy it."
"You asked her on a date above. Above."
Therion lifted his chin, hands clasped behind his back. A subservient, vulnerable position that he knew his queen preferred. Exposing the entirety of his chest to her. His heart lay in range of the jagged sea glass knife resting on the arm of her throne, or the beasts drowsing at her feet. She had the power to destroy him in an instant, but he knew she liked the feel of the kill.
He'd never understood it, until he'd found his sister's murderer and opted to tear the panther shifter apart with his bare hands.
I only meant to please her, Therian said.
But the River Queen's fingers dug into the carved arms of her throne.
You know how overwhelmed she becomes. She is too fragile for such things.
Therian sucked in a deep breath through his gills, exhaled it before saying, She handled herself well at the summit. A half lie. She'd done absolutely nothing of value at the summit, but at least she hadn't been cowering the whole time. Anemones shrank into themselves, a swift warning of his queen's ire before she said,
That was in an organized, guarded place. Lunathian is a wild forest of distraction and pleasure. It will devour her whole.
The iris eels sensed her tone and darted into the cracks and crevices around the throne.
I apologize for any distress the suggestion caused you or her.
He didn't dare so much as curl his fingers into a fist. The queen studied him with the concentration of one of the sobeks at her feet, when the beasts were poised to strike.
What of your progress with the Renast boy?
I have good reason to believe he's just arrived in this city. I have my people looking for him.
They hadn't found any new bodies today. For better or worse. He could only pray it didn't mean Pippa Spetsos had gotten her hands on the boy.
I want that boy at the Blue Court the moment he's found.
Pippa or the River Queen, above or beneath. Emil Renast's options were limited. Once the kid was down here, he wouldn't get back above unless the River Queen wished it. Or the Asteri dispatched one of their elite aquatic units to drag him out. But that would mean they'd learned of the River Queen's betrayal. But Therian only nodded, as he had always done, as he would always do.
We'll apprehend Emil soon.
Before Ophion.
Yes.
He didn't dare ask why she was bothering with any of it. From the moment she'd heard the rumors about the boy who could bring down those Omegas with his power-draining magic, she'd wanted Emil. She didn't share her reasons. She never did.
And before any of the other river courts.
Therian lifted his head at that.
You think they know about Emil, too?
The currents whispered to me about it. I don't see why my sisters wouldn't hear similar murmurings from the water.
The Queen of Valbara's four great rivers, the Istros, the Melanthos, the Nivius, and the Rubellus, the blue, the black, the white, and the red, respectively, had long been rivals, all mighty and gifted with magic, all vain and ancient and bored. While Therian might not be privy to his queen's most intimate plans, he could only assume she wanted the boy for the same reason Pippa Spetsos did, to use him as a weapon. One that could be used to get the queens of the black, white, and red courts to yield. With the boy in her thrall, she could potentially use him to siphon their powers, to turn all that elemental energy against them and expand her influence. But if they knew of Emil as well, then did they already scheme, thinking to take the blue court? And if the queen of the Red Court wished to overthrow his queen, to use Emil's gifts to drain her of power, would he fight it? Years ago, he would have said hell yes. But now? Therian lifted his face toward the surface, that distant beckoning ribbon of light. He found her studying him again, as if she could hear every thought in his mind. The sobek at her left cracked open an eye, revealing a slitted pupil amid green marbled citrine. His queen asked,
Are things so wonderful above that you resent your time beneath?
Therian kept his face neutral, kept swishing his fins with an idle grace.
Can't both realms be wonderful?
The second sobek opened an eye as well. Would they be opening their jaws next? They ate anything and everything. Fresh meat, trash, and perhaps most important, the bodies of the shameful dead. Having one's black boat overturned on its way to the Bone Quarter was the deepest sort of humiliation and judgment. A soul deemed unworthy of entering the holy resting place, its corpse given over to the river beasts to devour. But Therian kept his hands clasped behind him, kept his chest exposed, ready to be shredded apart. Let her see his utter subservience to her power. His queen only said, "Keep searching for the boy. Report as soon as you hear anything new." He bowed his head. "Of course." He swished his fin, readying to swim off the moment she gave the dismissal. But the River Queen said, "And Therian?" He couldn't stop his swallow at the smooth, casual tone. "Yes, my queen." Her full lips curved into a smile, so much like the beasts at her feet.
"Before you invite my daughter on a date above again, I think you should witness firsthand the disrespect those above show the citizens of the beneath."
The River Queen picked her punishments well. Therian would give her that. Swimming along the old square section of the quay an hour later, he kept his head down as he speared trash. He was her captain of intelligence. How many of his people had already noticed him here or heard about this? He stabbed a discarded, half-decayed pizza box. It fell into three pieces before he could tuck it into the giant bag drifting behind him on the current. The River Queen wanted a meal badly. Pippa Spetsos was leaving a trail of bodies in her hunt for the kid. And yet this was his queen's priority for him? Water splashed 20 feet above, and Therian lifted his head to find an empty beer bottle filling and then drifting down. Through the surface, he could just make out a blonde female laughing at him. She tried to fucking hit him with that bottle. Therian rallied his magic, smiling to himself as a plume of water showered the female, earning a host of shrieks and growls from those around her. 10 more bottles came flying down at him. Therian sighed, bubbles flowing from his lips. Captain whatever, indeed. The River Queen fancied herself a benevolent ruler who wanted the best for her people. Yet she treated her subjects as harshly as any Asteri. Therian wended between the muscle-crusted pillars of a dock, various crabs and bottom scavengers watching him from the shadows. Something had to change. In this world, in the hierarchies, not only in the way Ophion wanted, but this imbalance of power across all houses. Therian pried a bike tire, for fuck's sake, from between two rocks, muscles groaning. A giant blue crab scuttled over, waving its claws in reprimand. "Mine," it seemed to shout. Therian backed off, gesturing to the trash. "Have at it," he conveyed with a wave of his hand, and with a powerful thrust of his tail, swam farther along the quay. The glowing first lights cast ripples on the surface. It was like swimming through gold. Something had to change. For him, at least. Rune laid the star sword on his father's desk as the Autumn King stalked through the study doors. The top buttons of his father's black shirt were undone, his ordinarily smooth red hair a bit out of place, like someone had been running their hands through it. Rune shuddered. His father eyed the sword.
"What is so important that you interrupted my afternoon meeting?
Is that what you're calling it these days?" His father threw him an admonishing glance as he slid into his desk chair, surveying the bare star sword.
"You smell like trash."
"Thanks. It's a new cologne I'm trying out." Considering the insanity of the last hour, it was a miracle he could even joke right then. Agent Daybright had been in his mind, screaming at him to wake up. That was all he'd known before he'd started puking water and the gods knew what else. He certainly didn't want to know, on the Ox Training Center floor. Cormac had left by the time Rune mastered himself, apparently wanting to quickly search the area for any hint of Emil or Sophie. Bryce had still been in shock when Rune managed to ask what the fuck had happened. But she'd told him enough, then kicked the star sword toward him in the empty training hall, and left, which was when he'd rushed over here. Flame sparked at his father's fingers, the first warning of his impatience. So Rune asked, "What's the lore behind this sword?" His father arched a brow. "You've been its bearer for decades. Now you want to know its history?" Rune shrugged, his head still pounded from the blow the Reapers had given him. His stomach churned like he'd been drinking all night. "Does it have any special powers? Weird gifts?" The Autumn King swept a cold look over Rune, from his waterlogged boots to his half-shaved head. The longer hair scraggly thanks to the sewer trip.
"Something has happened. Some Reapers tried to jump me, and the sword reacted."
A light way of putting it. Had Bryce stayed away from the sword all these years because she somehow sensed that in her hand it would unleash horrors? He didn't want to know what his father would do with the truth. A sword that could kill the unkillable. How many rulers in Midgard would scheme and murder to attain it? Starting with his father and ending with the Asteri. Maybe they'd get lucky and the information would be contained to the Reapers. But the Underking? His father stilled.
"How did the sword react?
Shouldn't a father ask if his son is all right, and why the Reapers attacked?
You appear unharmed, and I assume you did something to offend them.
Thanks for your vote of confidence."
"Did you?"
"No."
"How did the sword react in the presence of the Reapers?"
"It glowed, then they ran from it." It was only a half lie. "Any idea why?"
"They are already dead. Blades hold no threat to them."
"Yeah, well, they freaked." His father reached for the black blade, but halted, remembering himself. It wasn't his blade to touch. Rune reined in his smirk of satisfaction, but his father watched the various globes and solar system models across his office for a long moment. Rune spied their own solar system in the center of it all. 7 planets around a massive star. 7 Asteri, technically 6 now, to rule Midgard. 7 princes of hell to challenge them. 7 gates in this city, through which hell had tried to invade this spring. 7 and 7 and 7 and 7. Always that holy number. Always,
"It's an ancient sword,"
the Autumn King said at last, drawing Rune from his wandering thoughts.
"From another world, made from the metal of a fallen star, a meteorite. This sword exists beyond our planet's laws. Perhaps the Reapers sensed that and shied away."
The Reapers had learned precisely how outside the planet's laws the sword was. It could fucking kill them. Rune opened his mouth, but his father sniffed him again, frowned.
"And when were you going to tell me your sister was involved in this incident? She's even more reckless than you."
Rune stifled the spike of anger in his gut. "Only fit for breeding, right?
She should consider herself lucky. I believe her valuable enough for that."
"You should consider yourself lucky that she didn't come in here to kick your ass for the betrothal to Cormac." His father stalked to the elegant wood liquor cabinet behind his desk and pulled out a crystal decanter of what looked and smelled like whiskey.
"Oh, I've been waiting for days now."
He poured himself a glass, not bothering to offer Rune any, and knocked it back.
"I suppose you convinced her not to.
She decided all on her own that you weren't worth the effort." His father's eyes simmered as he set the glass and decanter on the edge of his desk.
"If that sword is acting up,"
the Autumn King said, ignoring his barb,
"I'd suggest keeping it far from your sister."
"Too late. I offered it to her already. She didn't want it. I don't think she's interested in your politics." But she had run into a sewer teeming with Reapers after him. Rune's heart squeezed tight. His father poured himself another glass of whiskey, the only sign that something about this conversation rattled him. But the Autumn King's voice was bland as he said,
In ancient times, starborn rivals would slit each other's throats, even those of the children. She is now more powerful than you and I are, as you like to remind me.
Rune resisted the urge to ask whether that had played any part in his father's slaying of the last starborn heir.
Are you telling me to kill Bryce?
His father sipped from the whiskey this time before replying.
If you had any backbone, you would have done it the moment you learned she was starborn. Now what are you?
Another sip before he said mildly,
a second-rate prince who only possesses the sword because she allows you to have it.
Pitting us against each other won't work. But those words, second-rate prince, those gouged something deep in him.
Bryce and I are good.
The Autumn King drained the glass.
Power attracts power. It is her fate to be tied to a powerful male to match her own strength. I would rather not learn what comes of her union with the Umbra Mortis.
So you betrothed her to Cormac to avoid that?
To consolidate that power for the Fae.
Rune slowly picked up the star sword, refused to meet his father's stare while he sheathed it down his back.
So this is what being king is all about.
That old shit about keeping friends close and enemies closer.
It remains to be seen whether your sister is an enemy to the Fae.
I think the burden of that's on you. Overstepping your authority doesn't help. His father returned the crystal decanter to the cabinet.
I am a king of the Fae. My word is law. I cannot overstep my authority. It has no limits.
Maybe it should. The words were out before Rune could think. His father went still in a way that always promised pain.
And who will impose them? The governor? That doe-eyed angel.
A mirthless laugh.
The Asteri knew what they were doing in appointing a lamb to rule a city of predators.
Maybe. But I bet the Asteri would agree that there are limits to your power.
Why don't you ask them then, prince?
He smiled slowly, cruelly.
Maybe they'll make you king instead.
Rune knew his answer would mean his life or death. So he shrugged again, nonchalant as always, and aimed for the door.
Maybe they'll find a way to make you live forever. I sure as fuck have no interest in the job.
He didn't dare to look back before he left. Chapter 26 Bryce leaned against the alley side of a brick building bordering the Black Dock, arms crossed and face stony. Hunt, God's bless him, stood at her side, mirroring her position. He'd come right over the moment she'd called him, sensing that her eerily calm voice meant something big had gone down. She'd only managed to say something vague about Reapers before they'd found Cormac here, prowling for any hint of Emile. Cormac lounged against the wall across the alley, focus on the quay beyond. Not even the vendors selling touristy crap came here.
Well?
The Avalon Prince asked, not taking his attention from the Black Dock.
You can teleport, Bryce said, voice low.
That made Hunt's eyes widen. He kept himself contained, though, solid and still as a statue, wings tucked in, but brimming with power. One blink, and Hunt would unleash lightning on the prince.
What of it?
Cormac asked with no small hint of haughtiness.
What did you do to the Reapers you teleported out?
Put them about half a mile up in the sky.
The Avalon prince smiled darkly.
They weren't happy.
Hunt's brows rose, but Bryce asked,
You can go that far?
It's that precise?
I need to know the spot.
If it's a trickier location, indoors or a specific room. I need exact coordinates,
Cormac said.
My accuracy is within 2 feet.
Well, that explained how he'd shown up at Rune's house party. Dex Tech had picked up Cormac teleporting around the house's perimeter to calculate where he wanted to appear to make his grand entrance. Once he'd had them,
He'd simply walked right out of a shadow in the doorway. Hunt pointed to a dumpster halfway down the alley.
Teleport there.
Cormac bowed mockingly. Left side or right side? Hunt leveled a cool stare at him.
Left, he challenged.
Bryce suppressed a smile. But Cormac bowed at the waist again and vanished. Within a blink, he reappeared where Hunt had indicated.
Well, fuck,
Hunt muttered, rubbing the back of his neck. Then Cormac reappeared before them, right where he'd been standing. Bryce pushed off the wall.
How the hell do you do that?
Cormac slicked back his blonde hair.
You have to picture where you want to go, then simply allow yourself to take that step. As if you're folding two points on a piece of paper so that the two points can meet.
Like a wormhole,
Hunt mused, wings rustling. Cormac waved a dismissive hand.
Wormhole, teleportation, yes, whatever you want to call it.
Bryce blew out an impressed breath.
But it didn't explain. How'd you know where to find me and Rune?
I was on my way to meet you, remember? Cormac rolled his eyes, as if she should have figured it out by now, asshole.
I saw you run into the sewer, and I did some mental calculations for the jump. Thankfully, they were right.
Hunt let out an approving grunt, but said nothing. So Bryce said,
You're going to teach me how to do that. Teleport.
Hunt whipped his head to her, but Cormac simply nodded.
If it's within your wheelhouse, I will.
Hunt blurted,
I'm sorry, but Faye can just do this shit.
I can do this shit, Cormac countered. If Bryce has as much starborn ability as she seems to, she might also be able to do this shit.
Why?
Because I'm the super powerful and special magic starborn princess, Bryce answered, waggling her eyebrows.
Cormac said,
You should treat your title and gifts with the reverence they are due.
You sound like a reaper. She said, and leaned against Hunt.
He tucked her into his side. Her clothes were still soaked and smelled atrocious. But Hunt didn't so much as sniff as he asked Cormac,
Where did you inherit the ability from?
Cormac squared his shoulders, every inch the proud prince, as he said,
It was once a gift of the Starborn. It was the reason I became so
focused on attaining the Star Sword.
I thought my ability to teleport meant that the bloodline had resurfaced in me, as I've never met anyone else who can do it.
His eyes guttered as he added,
As you know, I was wrong. Some starborn blood, apparently, but not enough to be worthy of the blade.
Bryce wasn't going to touch that one, so she retied her wet hair into a tight bun atop her head.
What are the odds that I have the gift, too?
Cormac gave her a slashing smile.
Only one way to find out.
Bryce's eyes glowed with the challenge.
It would be handy.
Hunt murmured, his voice awed.
It would make you unstoppable.
Bryce winked at Hunt.
Hell yeah, it would. Especially if those Reapers weren't full of shit about the Prince of the Pit sending them to challenge me to some epic battlefield duel.
Worthy opponent, my ass.
You don't believe the Prince of the Pit sent them?
Cormac asked.
I don't know what I believe, Bryce admitted. But we need to confirm where those Reapers came from, who sent them, before we make any moves.
Fair enough,
Hunt said. Bryce went on.
Beyond that? This is twice now that we've gotten warnings about Hell's armies being ready.
Apollyon's a little heavy-handed for my tastes.
But I guess he really wants to get the point across, and wants me leveled up by the time all hell breaks loose.
Literally, I guess. Bryce knew there was no fucking way she'd ever stand against the Star Eater and live, not if she didn't expand her understanding of her power.
Apollyon had killed a fucking Asteri, for God's sakes.
He'd obliterate her. She said to Cormac,
Tomorrow night, you, me, training center. We'll try out this teleporting thing.
Fine, the prince said.
Bryce picked lingering dirt from beneath her nails and sighed.
I could have lived without Hell getting mixed up in this, without Apollyon apparently wanting in on Sophie's and Emile's powers.
Their powers,
Cormac said, face thunderous, are a gift and a curse. I'm not surprised at all that so many people want them. Hunt frowned.
And you really think you're going to find Emile just hanging around here?
The prince glowered at the angel.
I don't see you combing the docks for him.
No need, Hunt drawled. We're going to search for him without lifting a finger.
Cormac sneered.
Using your lightning to survey the city?
Hunt didn't fall for the taunt.
No. Using Declan Emmett.
Leaving the males to their posturing, Bryce pulled out her phone and dialed. Jessica answered on the second ring.
What?
Bryce smiled. Hunt half turned toward her at the sound of the sorceress's voice.
Got any death marks lying around?
Hunt hissed.
You can't be serious.
Bryce ignored him as Jessica answered.
I might. Plan on taking a trip, Quinlan.
I hear the Bone Quarter's gorgeous this time of year. Jessica chuckled, a rolling, sultry sound.
You do amuse me every now and then.
Pause.
You have to pay for this one, you know.
Send the bill to my brother. Rune would have a conniption, but he could deal. Another soft chuckle.
I only have two. And it'll take until tomorrow morning for them to reach you.
Fine. Thanks.
The sorceress said a shade gently.
You won't find any traces of Danica left in the Bone Quarter, you know.
Bryce tensed. What does that have to do with anything?
I thought you were finally going to start asking questions about her.
Bryce clenched the phone hard enough for the plastic to groan.
What sort of questions?
What the fuck did Jessica know? A low laugh.
Why don't you start by wondering why she was always poking around the gallery?
To see me, Bryce said through her teeth.
Sure,
Jessica said, and hung up. Bryce swallowed hard and pocketed her phone. Hunt was slowly shaking his head.
We're not going to the Bone Quarter.
I agree, Cormac grumbled. You're not going at all, she said sweetly to Cormac. We'll only have two fares, and Athalar is my plus one. The prince bristled, but Bryce turned to Hunt.
When the coins arrive tomorrow, I want to be ready.
Have as much information as possible about where those reapers came from. Hunt folded his wings behind him, feathers rustling.
Why?
So the Underking and I can have an informed heart-to-heart.
What was that shit Jessica said about Danica?
Hunt asked warily. Bryce's mouth hardened into a thin line. Jessica did and said nothing without reason. And while she knew she'd never get answers out of her old boss, at least this nudge was something to go on.
Turns out, we're going to have to ask Declan for an additional favor.
That night, still reeling from the events of the day, Rune flipped through the channels on the TV until he found the Sunball game, then set down the remote and swigged from his beer. On the other end of the sectional couch in Bryce's apartment, Ethan Holstrom sat hunched over a laptop, Declan beside him with a laptop of his own. Bryce and Hunt stood behind the two, staring over their shoulders, the latter's face stormy. Rune had told none of them, especially Bryce, about the conversation with his father. Ethan typed away, then said,
I'm super rusty at this.
Deck said without breaking his attention from the computer,
if you took Kerfner's intro to systems and matrices, you'll be fine.
Rune often forgot that Deck was friendly with people other than him and Flynn. While none of them had attended college, Deck had struck up a years-long friendship with the ornery CCU computer science professor, often consulting the Seder on some of his hacking ventures.
He gave me a B- in that class,
Ethan muttered.
From what he tells me, that's practically an A+,
Declan said.
Okay, Bryce said. Any idea how long this is going to take?
Declan threw her an exasperated look.
You're asking us to do two things at once, and neither is easy. So, a while?
She scowled. How many cameras are even at the Black Dock?
A lot,
Declan said, going back to his computer. He glanced to Holstrom's laptop.
Click that.
He pointed to a mark on the screen that Rune couldn't see.
Now type this code in to identify the footage featuring Reapers.
How Deck managed to direct Ethan to comb through the footage around the Black Dock from earlier today, while also creating a program to search through years of video footage of Danica at the gallery, was beyond Rune.
It's insane that you made this, Ethan said with no small bit of admiration. All in a day's work, Deck replied, typing away.
Pulling any footage from the gallery featuring Danica could take days, he'd said. But at least the footage from the Black Dock would only take minutes.
Rune carefully asked Bryce, You sure you trust Jessica enough to follow this lead? Or at all?
Jessica literally has a collection of books that could get her killed, Bryce said tartly. I trust that she knows how to stay out of dangerous entanglements, and wouldn't shove me into one either.
Why not tell you to look at the footage during the investigation this spring?
Hunt asked. I don't know. But Jessica must have had a good reason.
She scares me, Ethan said, gaze fixed on the computer.
She'll be happy to hear that, Bryce said, but her face was tight.
What's up?
Rune asked her mind to mind.
Bryce frowned.
You want the honest answer?
Yeah.
She tucked a strand of hair behind an ear. I don't know how much more of this surprise Danica had a big secret stuff I can take. It feels like, I don't even know. It feels like I never really knew her.
She loved you, Bryce. That's not in doubt.
Yeah, I know. But did Danica know about the Parthos books or the other contraband tomes in the gallery? Jessica made it sound like she did, like she took a special interest in them.
You guys never talked about it?
Never. But Jessica was always monitoring those cameras, so maybe she saw something. Danica was down there without me plenty of times. Though Lahaba was usually there, too.
Rune noted the pain that filled his sister's face at the fire sprite's name. We'll figure it out, Rune offered,
and Bryce gave him a thankful smile in return. Don't forget to keep an eye out for Emil around the docks. Bryce said to Ethan. Cormac had turned down the invitation to join them here. He'd said he wanted to continue hunting for Emil on the ground.
I already added it to the program, Declan said. It'll flag any Reaper or any person whose facial features and build match the kids.
Deck had managed to pull a still from the security footage in the town of Servast the night Emil and Sophie had separated. Rune again considered his sister, who was peering over Declan's shoulder with an intensity he recognized. She wouldn't let go of any of this. Would she be able to teleport? She'd told him that Cormac had agreed to try to teach her, and wouldn't that be something for the Autumn King to chew on?
Bryce plus teleporting, plus Starborn power, plus Star Sword with crazy killing abilities, plus Bryce magically outranking their father, equaled.
Rune kept his face neutral, tucking away thoughts of what a leveled-up Bryce might mean for the Fae. Ethan finished typing in the code and said without looking up,
Hylene is going to win this one.
Rune checked the sunball game just beginning its first period.
I thought Ionia was favored.
Ethan stretched out his long legs, propping his bare feet on a cushioned stool Bryce had dragged over from the windows to be a temporary replacement for the coffee table.
Jason Regez has been off the last two games. I played with him at CCU. I can tell when he starts to get in a funk. He'll fuck it up for Ionia.
Rune eyed Ethan. A few years off the sunball field hadn't gotten rid of the muscles on the male. He'd somehow gotten even bigger since then.
I hate Ionia anyway, Deck said. They're all swaggering assholes.
Pretty much. Ethan typed in the next line of code that Declan fed him. Bryce yawned audibly. Can't we watch Veiled Love?
No,
everyone answered. Bryce elbowed Hunt. I thought we were a team. Hunt snorted.
Sunball always trumps reality shows.
Traitor. Ethan snickered.
I remember a time when you knew all the players on the CCU team and their stats, Bryce.
If you think that was because I was remotely interested in the actual Sunball playing, you're delusional.
Hunt laughed, some of the tightness on the Angel's face lightening, and Rune smiled despite the old ache in his heart. He'd missed out on those years with Bryce. They hadn't been speaking then. Those had been formative, pivotal years. He should have been there.
Ethan flipped Bryce off, but said to Declan,
Okay, I'm in.
Bryce scanned the screen. Do you see any Reapers crossing in boats?
This is showing nothing landing at the Black Dock at all today. Or last night?
Athalar asked,
When's the last time any Reaper docked?
Ethan kept typing, and they all waited, the only additional sound the swift clack of Declan's fingers on the keys of his computer. The wolf said,
Yesterday morning. He grimaced. These two look familiar?
Bryce and Rune scanned the image Ethan had pulled up. Rune had no idea why the fuck he bothered, since he'd been unconscious. But a shiver went down his spine at the sagging, graying faces, the crepe-like skin so at odds with the jagged, sharp teeth that gleamed as the Reapers stepped from the boat. Both had pulled back their veils during the trip across the Istros, but tugged them over their faces as they stepped onto the Black Dock and drifted into the city. Bryce said hoarsely,
No, gods, they're awful. But no, those weren't the ones who attacked.
They might have been hiding out for a few days,
Athalar said.
The Prince of the Pit only threatened us the other night, but he might have had them in place already.
Rune had no idea how the Angel spoke so calmly. If the Star Eater had come to him and wanted to have a one-on-one chat, he'd still be shitting his pants.
I'm not seeing any kids lurking around the Black Dock either,
Ethan muttered, scanning the results. He twisted to Bryce.
No sign of Emil at all,
Rune asked.
Possible the kid took another way over. Maybe Danica found some sort of back door into the Bone Quarter.
Not possible, Athalar said. Only one way in, one way out.
Rune bristled.
That's what we've been taught. But has anyone ever tried to get in some other way?
Athalar snorted.
Why would they want to?
Rune glared at the Angel, but said, Fair enough. Ethan stopped on an image.
What about this one? He didn't take a boat over, just appeared from within the city.
That's the one. Bryce hissed, her face paling. They all studied the still. The Reaper was half turned to the camera as it entered the frame from a street near the Black Dock. He was taller than the others, but had the same grayish, soft face and those terrifying teeth. Athalar whistled.
You sure know how to pick 'em, Quinlan.
She scowled at the Angel, but asked Deck, Where's it coming from? Can you add its face to the program and run a search on the city's footage?
Declan's brows rose. You know how long that will take? Every camera in Lunathian? It's why we're not even doing it for Emil. It'd take... I can't even calculate how long we'd need.
Okay, Bryce said. But can we track this one for a while? She directed the last bit at Ethan, but the wolf shook his head.
There must be a logical reason for this, like a gap in the camera coverage or something. But that Reaper just seems to appear.
Micah had the Crystallos stay in known camera gaps,
Hunt said darkly.
These Reapers could know about them too.
Ethan pointed to the screen.
Right here is where they first appear. Before that, nothing.
Rune pulled up a map of the city in his Ox app.
There should be a sewer entrance right behind them. Possible they came out of there.
Ethan moved the footage around.
The cameras don't cover that sewer entrance,
Bryce said. So they probably knew it'd be a good entry point. And it'd make sense, given that they dragged us into the sewers, where there were no cameras at all.
Let me look around a little more,
Ethan offered, and clicked away. Athalar asked none of them in particular.
You think they were waiting for you, or for a meal?
Or both, Rune asked. Clearly, they wanted to stay hidden.
But did the Prince of the Pit send them, or did the Underking?
Athalar pushed.
Good thing we've got a date with the being who can answer that, Bryce said.
Rune winced. He'd paid for the death marks that Jessica had promised, but he wasn't happy about it. The thought of Bryce confronting the Underking scared the hell out of him.
We need a plan for how we question him, Athalar warned her.
I doubt he'll appreciate being questioned at all. Hence the research, Bryce shot back, gesturing to the computer.
You think I'm stupid enough to go in and fling accusations around? If we can confirm whether or not those Reapers came directly from the Bone Quarter, we'll have steadier footing when we question him. And if we can get any hint of Emil actually going over to the Bone Quarter, then we'll have a good reason to ask him about that, too.
Ethan added, considering what Therian thinks Pippa Spetsos has done while hunting for Emil, I'm half hoping the kid's already in the Bone Quarter. He dragged a hand through his short brown hair.
What she did to that Selkie we found this morning was no joke.
The wolf had filled them all in on the work he'd done with Therian earlier, the tortured body they suspected had been left behind by the rebel fanatic. Bryce pivoted and began pacing. Syrinx trotted at her heels, whining for a second dinner. Rune refrained from remarking on how similar the motion was to one he'd seen their father do so many times in his study. Unable to stand it, he turned back to the sunball game. Then Ethan said to Rune, picking up the thread of conversation from earlier,
See? Regis should have nailed that shot, but he balked. He's second-guessing himself. He's too deep in his head.
Rune glanced sidelong at the male.
You've never thought about playing again?
A muscle ticked in Ethan's jaw.
No. You miss it?
No.
It was an obvious lie. Rune didn't fail to note that Bryce's eyes had softened. But Ethan didn't so much as look in her direction, so Rune nodded to the wolf.
If you ever want to play a pickup game, me, Deck, and Flynn usually play with some of the Ox in Oleander Park over in Moonwood on Sundays.
Where's my invite? Bryce asked, scowling.
But Ethan said roughly,
Thanks, I'll think about it.
Hunt asked.
I'm assuming I don't get an invite either, Dannon.
Rune snorted at the angel.
You want an excuse for me to beat the shit out of you, Athalar? Then I'm down.
Athalar smirked, but his gaze drifted to Bryce, who was now staring over Declan's shoulder at the lightning-fast footage zooming by on his laptop. Footage of Danica from years ago. She straightened suddenly, cleared her throat.
I'm going down to the gym. Call me if you find anything.
She aimed for her bedroom, presumably to change. Rune watched Hunt glance between her disappearing form and the sunball game, weighing which one to follow. It took Athalar all of 30 seconds to decide. He ducked into his room, saying he was going to change for the gym. When Rune was alone with Deck and Ethan, his beer half finished, Ethan said,
Connor would have picked the game.
Rune raised an eyebrow.
I didn't realize it was a competition between them.
Between a dead male and a living one. Ethan just typed away, eyes darting over the screen. And for some reason, Rune dared ask,
What would you have picked?
Ethan didn't hesitate.
Bryce.
Chapter 27 Bryce didn't go to the gym, not yet anyway. She waited in front of the elevator, and when Hunt appeared, she tapped her wrist and said, You're late. Let's go. He halted.
We're not working out?
She rolled her eyes, stepping into the elevator and hitting the lobby button.
Honestly, Athalar, we've got a kid to find.
You really think Emil is here? What about the Bone Quarter?
Hunt asked, as Bryce strode through the warren of stalls that made up one of the meat market's many warehouses.
There was no missing her, not with her neon pink sneakers and athletic gear. That high ponytail that swished back and forth, brushing tantalizingly close to the glorious curve of her ass. The Reapers practically told you that he and Sophie are lying low over there. You're having Emmett and Holstrom comb through footage because you think Emile's over there. She paused at an open seating area, surveying the crammed array of tables and the diners hunched over them. Forgive me if I don't take those half-lives at their word, or want to wait around while Declan and Ethan stare at their screens. Jessica said the coins will arrive tomorrow, so why not look at alternatives in the meantime? What Danica said, where the weary souls find relief, couldn't that be here too?
Why would Danica tell them to lie low in the meat market?
Why tell them to lie low in the bone quarter?
She sniffed and sighed with longing toward a bowl of noodle soup.
Hunt said, even if Danica or Sophie told Emile it was safe to hide out, if I were a kid, I wouldn't have come here.
You were a kid like 1,000 years ago. Forgive me if my childhood is a little more relevant.
200 years ago, he muttered.
Still old as fuck. He pinched her ass, and she squeaked, batting him away, drawing more than a few eyes. Not exactly inconspicuous. How long until the Viper Queen heard they were here? Hunt tried not to bristle at the thought. He had zero interest in dealing with the shapeshifter tonight. Hunt marked the faces that turned their way, the ones who moved off into the stalls and shadows.
And if this is where Sophie told him to hide, Sophie was a fool for listening to Danica. Though I really doubt Danica would have suggested it as a rendezvous point.
Bryce glared at him over a shoulder.
This kid stole 2 boats and made it all the way here. I think he can handle the meat market.
Okay, buying that. You think he's simply going to be sitting at a table, twiddling his thumbs? You're no better than Cormac, stomping around the docks for any sign of this kid.
Hunt shook his head.
If you do find Emile, don't forget you'll have Therian and Cormac fighting you for him.
She patted his cheek.
Then it's a good thing I have the Umbra Mortis at my side, huh?
Bryce, he growled, be reasonable. I mean, look at where we are right now. This market's huge. Are we going to search through every warehouse ourselves?
Nope, Bryce put her hands on her hips. That's why I brought backup.
Hunt's brows rose. She lifted her hand, waving at someone across the space. He followed her line of attention, let out a low growl.
You didn't.
You're not the only badass I know, Athalar, she trilled, approaching Fury and Juniper, the former in her usual all black, the latter in tight jeans and a flowing white blouse. Hi, friends, Bryce said, smiling.
She kissed June's cheek as if they were meeting for brunch, then gave Fury a once-over.
I said casual clothes. These are her casual clothes, Juniper said, laughter in her eyes.
Fury crossed her arms, ignoring them as she said to Hunt.
Gym clothes, really?
I thought I was going to the gym, he grumbled.
Bryce waved him off.
All right, we divide and conquer. Try not to attract too much attention.
The last bit she directed at Hunt and Fury, and the merc glowered with impressive menace.
Don't ask questions, just watch, listen. June, you take the east stalls, Fury the west ones, Hunt the south, and me.
Her gaze drifted to the northern wall, where Memento Mori had been painted. The stalls beneath it, beneath the walkway above, lay within range of the door to the Viper Queen's quarters. Fury eyed her, but Bryce winked.
I'm a big girl, Fury. I'll be fine.
Hunt grunted, but suppressed any hint of objection.
That's not what I'm worried about, Fury said, then asked quietly, who is this kid again? His name is Emile, Bryce whispered. He's from Pangera, 13 years old.
And possibly very, very dangerous,
Hunt warned, glancing at Juniper.
If you spot him, come find us.
I can take care of myself, Angel, Juniper said with impressive cool.
She's a big girl, too, Bryce high-fived her friend. Right. Meet back here in 30? They parted,
and Hunt watched Bryce weave through the tables of the dining area, watched the many patrons note her but keep well away, before slipping between the stalls. Gazes slid back to him, questioning. Hunt bared his teeth in a silent snarl. Moving off toward the area she'd ordered him to sweep, Hunt opened his senses, calmed his breathing. 30 minutes later, he'd returned to the dining area, Juniper appearing a moment later.
Anything?
He asked the fawn, who shook her head.
Not a whisper,
the dancer frowned.
I really hope that kid isn't here.
She scowled at the warehouse.
I hate this place.
That makes two of us, Hunt said.
Juniper rubbed at her chest.
You should talk to Celestina about it. The things that happen here. Not only that fighting pit and the warriors the Viper Queen practically enslaves.
The fawn shook her head.
The other things, too.
Even Micah let the Viper Queen do what she wanted, Hunt said. I don't think the new governor is going to challenge her anytime soon.
Someone should,
she said quietly, eyes drifting to the memento mori on the wall.
Someday, someone should.
Her words were haunted and strained enough that Hunt opened his mouth to ask more, but Fury sauntered up, smooth as a shadow, and said, No sign of the kid. Hunt searched the space for Bryce and found her at a stall far too close to the Fae-guarded door to the Viper Queen's private living area. The towering Fae sentries a mere 50 feet from her didn't so much as blink at her presence, though. She had a bag swinging from her wrist, and she was chatting away. Bryce finished and walked toward them. Again, too many eyes watched her.
She's got some pep in her step,
Juniper observed, chuckling.
She must have gotten a good bargain.
The tang of blood and bone and meat stuffed itself up Hunt's nose as Bryce approached. I got some lamb bones from the butcher for Syrinx. He goes crazy for the marrow, she added to Juniper. Sorry. Right, the fawn was a vegetarian, but Juniper shrugged.
Anything for the little guy.
Bryce smiled, then surveyed them all. Nothing?
Nothing,
Hunt said.
Me neither, Bryce said, sighing. What now?
Fury asked, monitoring the crowd.
Even if Declan and Ethan can't find any footage of a meal around the Black Dock, Bryce said, the fact that there's no hint of him here at the meat market leads us right back to the Bone Quarter again.
So it gives us a bit more reason to even ask the Under King about whether a meal is there. Hunt's blood sparked. When she talked like that, so sure and unflinching, his balls tightened. He couldn't wait to show her just how insanely that turned him on. But Juniper whispered,
A little boy in the Bone Quarter.
We'll find him, Bryce assured her friend, and threw an arm around Juniper's shoulders, turning them toward the exit. Hunt swapped a look with Fury, and they followed. Hunt let Bryce and Juniper drift ahead a few feet, and then, when he was sure they wouldn't be overheard, asked Axtar,
Why does your girlfriend hate this place so much?
Fury kept her attention on the shadows between the stalls, the vendors and shoppers. Her brother was a fighter here. Hunt started.
Does Bryce know?
Fury nodded shallowly.
He was talented, Julius. The Viper Queen recruited him from his training gym, promised him riches, females, everything he wanted if he signed himself into her employ. What he got was an addiction to her venom, putting him in her thrall, and a contract with no way out. A muscle ticked in Fury's jaw. June's parents tried everything to get him freed. Everything. Lawyers, money, pleas to Micah for intervention. None of it worked. Julius died in a fight 10 years ago. June and her parents only learned about it because the Viper Queen's goons dumped his body on their doorstep, with a note that said, Memento Mori, on it. The elegant dancer strode arm in arm with Bryce.
I had no idea.
June doesn't talk about it, even with us. But she hates this place more than you can imagine.
So why'd she come?
Why had Bryce even invited her?
For Bryce, Fury said simply.
Bryce told her she didn't have to join, but she wanted to come with us. If there's a kid running around lost in this place, June would do anything to help find him, even come here herself.
Ah, Hunt said, nodding. Fury's eyes glittered with dark promise.
I'll burn this place to the ground for her one day.
Hunt didn't doubt it. An hour later, Bryce's arms and stomach trembled as she held her plank on the floor of her apartment building's gym, sweat dripping off her brow and onto the soft black mat beneath. Bryce focused on the droplet as it splattered, on the music thumping in her earbuds, on breathing through her nose, anything other than the clock. Time itself had slowed. 10 seconds lasted a minute. She pushed her heels back, steadying her body. 2 minutes down, 3 more to go. Before the drop, she'd usually managed a decent minute in this position. After it, in her immortal body, 5 minutes should be nothing. Master her powers indeed. She needed to master her body first. Though she supposed magic was ideal for lazy people. She didn't need to be able to hold a plank for 10 minutes if she could just unleash her power. Hell, she could blind someone while sitting down if she felt like it. She chuckled at the idea, horrible as it was. Her lounging in an oversized armchair, taking down enemies as easily as if she were changing the channel with a remote. And she did have enemies now, didn't she? She'd killed a fucking reaper today. As soon as those death marks arrived from Jessica tomorrow morning, she'd demand answers from the Under King. It was why she'd come down here, not only to validate her excuse for leaving the apartment. Well, that, and seeing Danica on Declan's laptop as it scanned through footage. Her head had begun spinning, and acid had been burning through her veins. And sweating it all out seemed like a good idea. It always worked in Madame Kira's classes. She owed June a massive box of pastries for coming tonight. Bryce checked the clock on her phone. 2 minutes, 15 seconds. Fuck this. She plopped onto her front, elbows splaying, and laid her face directly on the mat. A moment later, a foot prodded her ribs. Since there was only one other person in the gym, she didn't bother to be alarmed as she craned her neck to peer up at Hunt. His lips were moving, sweat beading his brow and dampening his tight gray t-shirt. God's damn it. How could he look so good? She tugged an earbud out. What? She asked.
I asked if you were alive.
Barely.
His mouth twitched, and he lifted the hem of his t-shirt up to clean his dripping face. She was rewarded with a glimpse of sweat-slicked abs. Then he said,
You dropped like a corpse.
She cradled her arms, rubbing the sore muscles.
I prefer running. This is torture.
Your dance classes are equally grueling.
This isn't as fun.
He offered her a hand, and Bryce took it, her sweaty skin sliding against his as he hauled her to her feet. She wiped at her face with the back of her arm, but found it to be equally sweaty. Hunt returned to the array of metal machines that seemed more like torture devices, adjusting the seat on one to accommodate his gray wings. She stood in the center of the room like a total creep for a moment, watching his back muscles ripple as he went through a series of pull-down exercises.
Burning fucking soulless.
She'd blown this male, had slid down that beautiful strong body and taken his ridiculously large cock in her mouth, and had nearly come herself as he'd spilled on her tongue. And she knew it was 10 kinds of fucked up, considering how much shit they were juggling and all that lay ahead. But look at him. She wiped at the sweat rolling down her chest, leaving a spectacularly unsexy stain beneath her sports bra. Hunt finished his set, but kept gripping the bar above his head, arms extended high above him, stretching out his back and wings. Even in a t-shirt and gym shorts, he was formidable. And she was still staring. Bryce twisted back to her mat, grimacing as she put in her earbud and it blasted music. But her body refused to move. Water. She needed some water. Anything to delay going back to that plank.
She trudged for the wet bar built into the far wall of the gym. The beverage fridge beneath the white marble counter was stocked with glass water bottles and chilled towels, and Bryce helped herself to both. A bowl of green apples sat on the counter, along with a basket full of granola bars, and she took the former, teeth sinking into the crisp flesh. Fuck doing planks. Savoring the apple's tart kiss, she glanced over toward Hunt, but where was he? Even that telltale ripple of his power had faded away. She scanned the expansive gym, the rows of machines, the treadmills and ellipticals before the wall of windows overlooking the bustle of the old square. How had he... Hands wrapped around her waist, and Bryce shrieked, nearly leaping out of her skin. Light erupted from her chest, but with the music thumping in her ears, she couldn't hear anything. Fucking hell, Quinlan, Hunt said, prying her earbuds away. Listen to your music a little louder, will you? She scowled, pivoting to find him right behind her.
It wouldn't matter if you didn't sneak up on me.
He flashed her a sweaty, wicked grin.
Just making sure my Shadow of Death skills don't get rusty before tomorrow's tea party with the Under King. I thought I'd see if I could dim myself a bit.
Hence her inability to sense him creeping up. He rubbed at his eyes.
I didn't realize you'd be so jumpy or bright.
I thought you'd praise me for my quick reflexes.
Good jump. You almost blinded me. Congrats.
She playfully slapped his chest, finding rock-hard muscles beneath the sweat-dampened shirt.
Soulless Hunt.
She wrapped her knuckles on his pecs.
You could bounce a gold mark off these things.
His wings rustled.
I'm taking that as a compliment.
She propped her elbows on the counter and bit into her apple again. Hunt extended a hand, and she wordlessly handed him one earbud. He fitted it to his ear, head angling as he listened to the song.
No wonder you can't do a plank for more than 2 minutes, if you're listening to this sad sack music.
And your music is so much better.
I'm listening to a book.
She blinked. They'd often swapped music suggestions while working out, but this was new.
Which book?
Voran Tritus's memoir about growing up in the Eternal City, and how he became, well, him.
Tritus was one of the youngest late-night talk show hosts ever, and absurdly hot. Bryce knew the last fact had little to do with why Hunt tuned in religiously, but it certainly made her own viewing much more enjoyable.
I'd say listening to a book while working out is even less motivational than this sad sack music, she said.
It's all muscle memory at this point. I only need to pass the time until I'm done.
Asshole. She ate more of her apple, then changed the song. Something she'd first heard in the hallowed space of the White Raven Dance Club, a remix of a slower song that somehow managed to combine the song's original sensual appeal with a driving beat that demanded dancing. The corner of Hunt's mouth kicked up.
You trying to seduce me with this music?
She met his gaze as she chewed on another mouthful of apple. The gym was empty, but the cameras.
You're the one who snuck up to fondle me.
He laughed, the column of his throat working. A droplet of sweat ran down its powerful length, gleaming among all that golden brown skin, and her breathing hitched. His nostrils flared, no doubt scenting everything that went hot and wet within the span of a breath. He tucked in his wings, leaving the earbud in place as he took a step closer. Bryce leaned slightly against the counter, the marble digging into her overheated spine. But he only took the apple from her fingers, held her gaze while he bit in, then slowly set the core on the counter. Her toes curled in her sneakers. This is even less private than my bedroom. Hunt's hands slid onto her waist, and he hoisted her onto the counter in one easy movement. His lips found her neck, and she arched as his tongue slid up one side, as if licking away a bead of sweat.
Best be quiet then, Quinlan,
he said against her skin. Lightning skittered around the room. She didn't need to look to know he'd severed the camera wires, and likely had a wall of power blocking the door.
didn't need to do anything other than enjoy the sensation of his tongue on her throat, teasing and tasting. She couldn't stop the hands that slid into his hair, driving through the sweaty strands, all the way down his head until they landed on the nape of his neck. She drew him closer as she did so, and Hunt lifted his head from her neck to claim her mouth. Her legs opened wider, and he settled between them, pressing hard as his tongue met hers. Bryce groaned, tasting apple and that storm-kissed cedar scent that was pure Hunt, grinding herself against his demanding hardness. With his gym shorts and her skin-tight leggings, there was no hiding his erection or the dampness that soaked through her pants. His tongue tangled with hers, hands dropping from her waist to cup her ass. She gasped as his fingers dug in, pulling her harder against him, and she hooked her legs around his middle. She couldn't taste him deep enough, fast enough. His shirt came off, and then she was running her fingers over those absurd abs and side abs and pecs, down the shifting muscles of his back, frantic and desperate to touch all of him. Her tank top peeled away, and then his teeth nipped at the swells of her breasts above the seafoam green of her sports bra, the fabric almost neon against her tan skin. He bracketed her waist, calluses scraping her skin as he tilted her back, and Bryce let him lay her on the counter. She propped herself up on her elbows as he pulled away, graceful as an ebbing tide, hands running from her breasts to her sweaty stomach. Hunt's fingers curled over the waistband of her black leggings, but paused. His gaze lifted to hers in silent request. At the black fire she beheld there, the sheer beauty and size and perfection of him? Hell yes, she said, and Hunt grinned wickedly, rolling down her leggings, exposing her midriff, then her abdomen, then the lacy top of her amethyst thong. Her pants and underwear were soaked with sweat. She didn't want to imagine what they smelled like, and she opened her mouth to tell him so, but he'd already knelt. He pulled off her sneakers, then her socks, then the leggings, then gently, so gently, he took her right ankle and kissed its inside, licked at the bone, then at her calf, the inside of her knee. Oh, gods, this was going to happen. Right here in the middle of the building gym where anyone could fly past the wall of windows 20 feet away. He was going down on her right here, and she'd needed it more than she'd ever needed anything. His tongue traced circles along the inside of her right thigh. Higher and higher, until she was shaking, but his hands slid up, looping through the waistband of her thong. He pressed a kiss to the front of her underwear, and she could have sworn he shuddered as he inhaled. Bryce went liquid, unable to stop her writhe of demand, and Hunt huffed a warm laugh against her most sensitive place, kissing her again through the fabric of her underwear. But then he kissed her left thigh, beginning a downward trajectory, pulling her underwear away as he went. And when the thong was completely gone, when she was bared to the world, Hunt's wings splayed above him, blocking her from the world's view. Only his to see, his to devour. Her breathing turned jagged as his mouth reached her left ankle, kissing again, and then he was sliding back up. He halted with his head between her thighs, though, took her feet and propped them onto the counter, spread her legs wide. Bryce moaned softly as Hunt surveyed her, the light glowing through his wings, making him look like an avenging angel lit with inner fire. "Look at you," he murmured, voice guttural with need. She'd never felt so naked, yet so seen and cherished, not as Hunt slid a finger through her wetness. "Fuck yeah," he growled, more to himself than her, and she really, truly couldn't breathe as he knelt again, head poised where she needed him most. Hunt softly, reverently laid a hand on her, opening her for his own personal tasting. His tongue swept along her in an introductory, "Hi, nice to fuck you" flit. She bit her lip, panting through her nose.
Yet Hunt bowed his head, brow resting just above her mound as his hands slid to her thighs once more. He inhaled and exhaled, shuddering, and she had no idea if he was savoring her scent or really needed a moment to calm the hell down. One or two more licks, and she knew she'd lose her mind entirely. Then Hunt pressed a kiss to the top of her sex, and another, as if he couldn't help it. His hands caressed her thighs. He kissed her a third time, raised wings twitching, and then his mouth drifted south, one hand with it. Again he parted her, and pressed his tongue flat against her as he dragged it up. Stars sparked behind Bryce's eyes, her breasts aching so much she arched into the air, as if seeking invisible hands to touch them.
"That's it,"
Hunt said against her, and flicked his tongue over her clit with lethal precision. She couldn't endure this, couldn't handle one more second of this torture. His tongue pushed into her, curling deep, and she bucked.
"You taste like God's damned paradise,"
he growled, pulling back enough for her to note her wetness on his mouth, his chin.
"I knew you'd taste like this."
Bryce clapped a hand over her mouth to keep from shouting as Hunt drove his tongue back into her, then dragged it all the way up to her clit. His teeth clamped down gently, and her eyes rolled back into her head, burning soulless, unmerciful Cathona. "Hunt," she managed to say, voice strangled. He paused, ready to halt should she give the word, but that was the last thing she wanted. Bryce met Hunt's blazing gaze, her chest heaving, head a dizzy, starry mess. She said the only thing in her head, her mind, her soul, "I love you." She regretted the words the moment they left her mouth. She'd never said them to any male, hadn't even thought the words about Hunt, though she'd known for a while. Why they came out then, she had no idea, but his eyes darkened again, his fingers tightened on her legs. Oh gods, she'd fucked everything up. She was a stupid, horny idiot, and what the fuck had she been thinking, telling him that when they weren't even dating, for fuck's sake? Hunt unleashed himself, dipped his head back down between her thighs, and feasted on her. Bryce could have sworn thunderstorms rumbled in the room. It was answer and acceptance of what she'd said, like he was beyond words now. Tongue and teeth and purring, all combined into a maelstrom of pleasure that had Bryce grinding against him. Hunt gripped her thighs hard enough to bruise, and she loved it, needed it. She dove her hips into his face, pushing his tongue into her, and then something zapped right at her clit, as if Hunt had summoned a little spark of lightning, and her brain and body lit up like white fire, and oh gods, oh gods, oh gods, Bryce was screaming the words, Hunt's wings still cocooning them as she came hard enough that she arced clean off the counter, fingers scrabbling in his hair, pulling hard. She was flaring with light inside and out, like a living beacon. She could have sworn they fell through time and space, could have sworn they tumbled toward something, but she wanted to stay here, with him, in this body and this place. Hunt licked her through every ripple, and when the climax eased, when the light she'd erupted with had faded and that falling sensation had steadied, he lifted his head. He met her stare from between her thighs, panting against her bare skin, lightning in his eyes. "I love you too, Quinlan." No one had said those words to Hunt in 2 centuries. Shahar had never said them, not once, though he'd stupidly offered the words to her. The last person had been his mother a few weeks before her death, but hearing them from Quinlan. Hunt lay beside her in bed 30 minutes later, the minty scent of their toothpaste and lavender of their shampoo mingling in the air. That had been weird enough, showering one after the other, then brushing their teeth side by side, those words echoing. Walking through the apartment, past Rune, Declan, and Ethan watching Sunball analysts argue over tonight's game, wondering how so much and yet so little had changed in the span of a few minutes. Going into the bone quarter tomorrow seemed like a far-off storm,
a distant rumble of thunder. Any thought of their search at the meat market tonight dissolved like melting snow. In the dimness, the TV still droning from the living room, Hunt stared at Bryce. She silently watched him back.
One of us has got to say something, Hunt said, voice gravelly.
What else is there to say? She asked, propping her head on a fist, hair spilling over a shoulder in a red curtain.
You said you loved me.
And? She cocked an eyebrow. Hunt's mouth twitched upward.
It was said under duress.
She bit her lip. He wanted to plant his teeth there. Are you asking whether I meant it? Or do you think you're that good with your mouth that I went out of my mind? He flicked her nose. Smartass. She flopped back onto the mattress. They're both true. Hunt's blood heated.
Yeah?
Oh, come on. She tucked her arms behind her head. You have to know you're good at it. That lightning thing? Hunt held up a finger, a spark of lightning dancing at the tip.
Thought you'd enjoy that.
If I'd known ahead of time, I might have been concerned about you deep-frying my favorite parts. He laughed warmly.
I wouldn't dare. They're my favorite parts, too.
She lifted herself onto her elbows, unable to keep from fidgeting. Does it weird you out, what I said?
Why should it? I reciprocated, didn't I?
Maybe you felt bad for me and wanted to make it less weird.
I'm not the kind of person who lightly tosses those words around.
Me neither. She reached over, and Hunt leaned toward her hand, letting her brush her fingers through his hair. I've never said it to anyone. I mean, like, romantically.
Really?
His chest became unbearably full. She blinked, her eyes like golden embers in the darkness. Why the surprise?
I thought you and Connor.
He wasn't sure why he needed to know. That fire banked slightly. No. We might have one day, but it didn't get that far. I loved him as a friend, but I still needed time. She smiled crookedly. Who knows? Maybe I was just waiting for you. He grabbed her hand, pressing a kiss to her knuckles.
I've been in love with you for a while. You know that, right?
His heart thundered, but he said,
I was very attached to you during our investigation. But when Sandriel had me in that cell under the Comitium, she put on this fucked-up slideshow of all the photos on my phone, of you and me. And I watched it and knew. I saw the photos of us toward the end, how I was looking at you and you were looking at me. And it was a done deal.
Sealed with you jumping in front of a bomb for me.
It's disturbing when you make jokes about that, Quinlan.
She chuckled, kissing his jaw. Hunt's body tensed, readying for another touch, begging for another touch. She said, I made the drop for you, and offered to sell myself into slavery in your stead. I think I'm allowed to joke about this shit.